Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by Winamp. Subscribe to Net at Night and all your favorite podcasts with the ultimate media player. Download it for free at winamp.com. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Net at Night, episode 163, recorded August 10th, 2010. Getting diggy with it. This episode of Net at Night is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Bring people across the country or around the world together with a web conferencing tool that's the best of the best. GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com/night. And by squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/night. Hi, I'm Sarah Lane from Petaluma, California.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
And this is Net at Night, episode 163. Hi, Amber.
Hey, Sarah. It's good to be back on with you. It's been a while since we co-hosted together. I think it was back in June when we were lucky enough to take over the show.
I think you're right, because Leo was out and about doing something or other, and it's the same thing today. I'm not actually really from Petaluma, California, but I'm from just about 20 miles north of here, so it kind of works.
That's close enough. Yeah. That's close enough. I'm not from Toronto either, so...
There you go.
Technically speaking,
from right this second.
Yeah. Exactly. So, Sarah, I have to tell you, I wrote you a little message on Twitter, but you were in my dreams the other night. And I know it's always boring when people talk about their dreams, but I have to say it was very strange. We were really good friends, and then for some reason you wanted to kill me. And I don't remember much. It didn't make sense. But it's after I saw the movie Inception, so I think my mind was messed up.
So first of all, we've never actually met each other, and people who have watched us on these shows would already know this, because we always say, isn't it so weird that we've never actually met in real life and shook hands or hugged or whatever? But it's weird that in your dream it was this whole different situation, and it's even weirder that I wanted to kill you, because I assure you I do not.
It was weird. It was, you know, you wake up and you're thinking your dream makes absolutely no sense at all. My dream was like that. It was very, very bizarre. So I blame Inception, Leonardo DiCaprio and that crew for, inspiring strange thoughts in my evening sleep.
You know, I had to see Inception twice in order to really understand how the plot actually worked, because when I walked out of there the first time, I enjoyed the movie. I mean, I liked it a lot, but I had to admit to myself that there were a couple little, well, wait a second, whose dream were they in that one part? And the snow and the guy who got really old. And there were certain things I felt like, I think I just need one more go around and then I'll really get it. And then I can really say that I understood it. So it was a two viewing type of a situation for me.
Maybe did it help the second time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it did a lot. Yeah, because I think the first time, you know how in movies where the visual effects are part of the fun of it, I get distracted by that stuff because I'm always thinking, ooh, how do they do that? And what kind of cameras are they? Or you know, is the camera on some sort of a tracking device? And what are they doing with the crane? And sometimes I can distract myself. So I felt like I walked out of there the first time thinking, well, I really liked it, but I should have paid more attention to exactly all the dialogue that was said. So, yeah.
Yeah, I could appreciate that. For me, the first part of the movie was very strange. I sort of sat there for about half an hour thinking, I'm definitely not going to like this movie. You know,
really?
It is just too bizarre. And then you really get sucked into it and you don't want it to end. So it was kind of a slow start, I found. Just trying to figure out, you have to kind of, you know, shift your mind and think in sort of a different space. And I think people aren't used to that.
Right.
So if you're one of those people who loves reality, it's definitely not for you.
Yeah, and it's I like to think that I'm somebody who can keep up on a complicated storyline for the most part, but this one was just like, no. You know, maybe it was a late showing. I mean, I know I didn't fall asleep or anything, but Yeah, it was a good movie, but apparently can make you think your friends are out to get you. So,
yeah, sorry about that one.
It's all right.
Yeah. All right. So for our first tech line, there's tons of tech news happening, but I thought we should just mention this. Well, I'm sure it has been mentioned on lots of other Twitch shows, is that Google Wave is shutting down for business.
RIP Wave. I don't know about you, but if I'm being completely honest, I haven't used Wave in a long time. So it's not directly affecting me too much, but I know folks who had really, for the last however long, where people were sort of like, Wave, not ready for prime time, no one's using it. It seemed like a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon and then jumped off really quick. There was definitely friends of mine who would still sing its praises and try to convince me that there were really good things about Wave and people just needed to use it differently than they were used to using the web, but I guess not enough.
No, I mean, for me, the only good thing that came out of Wave was that really interesting Pulp Fiction video where someone took the script of Pulp Fiction and all of the audio and used the functionality in Wave to lay down the video to be able to kind of describe what was going on in Pulp Fiction. And that was pretty much it for me. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that, but
it's a very
cool video. You should check it out. And other than that, I just think that it didn't really do anything new and innovative. And when it was first announced, I know Leo and I talked about it, and we really thought it was going to be kind of maybe even a Facebook competitor. You know, it would have all of these social features and really enhance our communication with our friends. But the reality is it's kind of like a pimped out version of Gmail, I think.
Yeah. It seems that Google has an issue with rolling things out that are ready for prime time, not because they're not capable of it, but I kind of feel this way with Buzz too. I'm having to actively sort of keep in Buzz and keep using it rather than it just sort of fall by the wayside a little bit, because it's just, yeah, it's not really giving me anything that's new or exciting. And I don't know. I know that that's not Google's thing, is not flashy, exciting stuff. It's well built, and there are obviously a lot of smart people who work there. But it was really a challenge from the get-go with Wave. I thought, hey, this is interesting. This is a neat idea. People are really going to have to adapt to different ways of using the service. But it just didn't catch on. I don't know.
As much as people say that they want privacy and, you know, closed networks where they communicate with their friends, I really think when you get something like Google Wave, which is kind of an internal service, and I would argue the same thing for Buzz because it's just Gmail users, I think people today actually want more openness and they want more public-facing tools and to be able, you know, with Twitter, anyone can see what you're doing, and there's kind of a bit of ego involved in that. And I hate to say it, but I kind of think that's the future of social networking, is something where you become sort of bigger than yourself by using some of these tools.
Yeah, I remember, especially when, well, Wave and Buzz too, it's like, well, we've got this built in millions of Gmail users already. So that's a great, you're starting with such a big community already, but it still is a closed system for people who, I mean, I don't know how many people you know who aren't using Gmail, but I've got a lot of friends who don't.
Oh yeah.
I don't know who Buzz is. They certainly never used Wave and they had no reason to.
I have friends who are still on Hotmail.
Me too. Back a family member who shall remain nameless.
Exactly. Oh, there's another neat headline that is actually trending on Twitter right now. I'm sure you've seen this, about the girl who quits her job on dry erase boards, and she emails her entire office up to 30 photos where she's basically describing why she's leaving, and she goes from happy to kind of snarky and really points out one, I think her boss in particular, and she's not satisfied with the experience working with him. I guess he's kind of sexist. This has been making the rounds. Some people have actually said that it's a hoax. I don't know. It seems to be getting a ton of attention, but not a lot of information about who this girl is, except for her name is Jenny.
I think that the hoax theory is probably hard to... I think a lot of people are bringing that up because yesterday the big story was the JetBlue employee jumping off the plane with the beers off of the slide. And it was like... It was funny because that story sort of came and went, and I think we were up, a few of us upstairs, Tom mentioned it or something, and we all had a chuckle like, boy, that guy had a bad day. Maybe he wasn't ready to be a flight attendant or something like that. But it really got a lot of attention online. I mean, Twitter, a lot of my friends on Twitter were retweeting the link and, oh, this guy's my hero. And, you know, you think like, well, I don't know. If you were really wanting to go somewhere that day and you were on that flight, I don't know how funny you would think the whole thing was. You know, it's probably better from afar, but it's probably something like this girl, Jenny, quitting her job. It might be easier to say, well, maybe she's trying to one-up that guy because that guy is like the internet hero of yesterday. But maybe it's also just if you're going to go out and you hate your boss or you, for whatever reason, you are ready to quit your job, that it's a funny way to go out. You get yourself a little bit of attention and she's cute. She's got good penmanship.
Yeah, no, I it's hard to say right now. I totally agree with you. I mean, it's probably something in the next couple of days that more information will leak out. I do think it's pretty creative. And, you know, I think you're right as well as far as kind of picking up on or being on the heels of that JetBlue story in the sense of dynamic ways to quit your job. I mean, everybody kind of wants to go out with a bang. And this girl has obviously demonstrated that that can work because it's very cute, very clever. And unlike the JetBlue incident where I'm sure he's going to face a lot of issues from authorities.
Got arrested. I don't think she's going to get arrested for this.
No. I think
somebody might buy her a beer or something.
She'll be applauded, and I'm sure she'll find a new job fairly soon, depending on what she wants to do. But I would argue, just from a branding perspective, that maybe at the end she could put some information about, hey, check out my online resume, because hopefully she doesn't just disappear into the ether.
Right, exactly. And I guess the idea that people overshare online, I mean, we're used to all of that. And some people seem to do it. They want to get attention, even if it's bad attention. That's the point. And then sometimes situations just kind of become viral by accident. I mean, she's obviously doing this in order for as many people to see it as possible, because that you wouldn't do it otherwise. But it still scares me because I think, oh my gosh, maybe the Spencer guy that was her boss really was just the worst boss ever. And maybe everyone in the office agrees. So she knows that she's not really burning any bridges with anybody except him. But still, what happens the next time it's like her dream job and maybe her next boss went to college with Spencer or something, you know? It's like, oh, it scares me a little bit that these sorts of things, as funny as they are at the time, always come back to haunt people, or they have the potential to.
Yeah, it's like the person who hires her, you know, wants to kind of take her aside after a few days and be like, hey, you're not going to do that to us, are you?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Walking around in eggshells.
I know.
She's got everyone wrapped around her little finger.
So I guess you have to just figure out, is it worth it for me to never burn any bridges with any of Spencer's friends and or colleagues that I may come across in the future, whether it's at the grocery store or in an interview? And if so, then go ahead, because otherwise it was a pretty creative way to quit.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. And obviously getting tons of attention.
And now everyone knows that he spent most of his week playing Farmville, so that's pretty embarrassing.
That is kind of embarrassing. And I think TechCrunch, I was looking at one of their headlines about this, and they said something along the lines of, now we know that great bosses read TechCrunch. Obviously, it's a little tongue-in-cheek there.
Right, exactly.
But they're also taking advantage of it. Because I think he spent about 5 hours a week. That's what she had written on one of her boards, that Spencer spent that much time just perusing TechCrunch.
I know. Well, it's I guess she meant that as an insult, but I do that.
Certainly, I spend a lot more time on Mashable.
Yeah, do you? I'm more of a TechCrunch person if I had to choose between the two, but they're different. They're different. Mashable's more, I guess, the overall social media kind of a spin. And I find more sort of pop culture, I guess, on Mashable.
Yeah.
And TechCrunch,
yeah,
more of the business angle. And I have to say, the business stuff is, it's not really my forte so much, so I try to make myself read that stuff, because otherwise, I don't know how much I would absorb it on my own. I kind of have to try.
I think one thing about TechCrunch too, I mean, if I were living in the San Francisco Bay Area, I probably would read it more often, because I feel like a lot of their stories are kind of focused on some of the new companies down in that area. Whereas Mashable, I think it's more of a general audience. Like, you know, you won't hear TechCrunch necessarily talk about, you know, things that are happening online in other parts of the world, where Mashable, I think, is a little bit more global. I think you're right. They're just very different sites, but I do read them both.
Yeah, me too. Along with bunch of others. I usually go. What's your morning routine? If you just want to know everything that you've missed since you had your 3 hours of sleep since Connor was crying last time, I usually fire up Tech Meme and just kind of see what's risen to the top, and then go from there and start following links, and then I will launch Twitter and see what people are talking about that I may not have gotten from headlines alone. Is that kind of what you do?
I kind of do the same thing. I mean, Twitter, I think, is kind of pretty much the number one destination. I mean, I hate to say it, but I even go there to find out if there's any breaking news, and there's some people I follow in the news business. And then from there, I'll go to sites like Mashable and TechCrunch, and then some newspaper sites, and just sort of, you know, maybe three or four different pages. But mostly, right. I think I rely on information from my friends, and that tends to be on Twitter, especially lately. I just find, you know, I'm always checking Twitter and always on top of it. I always thought, well, Twitter would kind of fade away, but for me, I don't know about you, but it's actually become a bigger tool in my life in a lot of ways.
Totally, I completely agree with Twitter. And I did say that I would go to somewhere like Tech Meme first and look at headlines, and then go to Twitter. I do actually fire up Twitter first thing in the morning before I even get out of bed, because it's like if there was an earthquake somewhere, or you know a variety of things that could be that the most breakingest. news ever on Twitter.
You're like Stephen Colbert making
exactly.
up new words.
Yes. Most breakiness.
Truthiness and breakiness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
That's a good one. So are you're on Facebook as well. I think I'm pretty sure that we're friends on Facebook. This was a neat story, just a quick little headline, how Facebook plans to clean up birthday wall posts. Because now if it's someone's birthday who you're friends with, you'll notice that all of a sudden your news feed gets filled with people who are posting happy birthday. It's the same thing over and over again. So Facebook has this new feature where they're going to be collapsing comments, you know, like happy birthday comments that are on the same subject. So you don't necessarily have to see all of them. I think it's a really great idea, because that's happened to me before. All of a sudden, you know, your inbox or your newsfeed just gets filled up.
Right. And when it is your birthday, it's great, because it's always nice to get a bunch of birthdays, happy birthdays. But yeah, so if it's your birthday and I go to your wall and I say happy birthday, I'm usually one of a long stream. And the whole thing is just kind of a mess. I mean, the sentiment is there, but it was never really all that clean. And then, there's the gift stuff, and that was sort of confusing for a while. And yeah, it always kind of seemed like it was a nice idea, but it hadn't really been thought out UI wise.
Yeah, I get the same feeling as well.
Well, Amber, I think we've got Kevin on the line. Before we get to him, want to just take a second to thank GoToMeeting for being one of our sponsors for Net at Night. Episode 163, GoToMeeting is one of those things that you and I would be great with, because we don't ever see each other. We're never in the same room at the same time. And so if we want to go over notes or presentations, or you want to walk me through something, all we'd have to do is both fire up GoToMeeting, and that's how we could communicate with each other. You don't have to get on a plane. You don't have to spend taxi money. You don't have to do any of that stuff. All you'd have to do is go to GoToMeeting, and you know, you can collaborate and product reviews. I mean, we both work in tech. We both do a lot of demonstrational kind of stuff. Not really with each other, although I'd love for you to give me product review every once in a while. That'd be great.
I would love to.
Okay, good. We should do that. So pretty much any type of meeting, all you do is sign up for GoToMeeting, and our special little URL for this show is gotomeeting.com/night. So if you sign up today, kind of cool. You get a 30-day free trial. So if you don't know if this is the thing for you, that's okay. You've got some time to figure it out. You can sign up 30 days free and just check it out. You can have all your meetings you want for one low flat rate if you decide that GoToMeeting is the choice for you. And you get phone and voice over IP conferencing included for free. So gotomeeting.com/night is the URL. And we thank them again for being a sponsor.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I had to put together a toolbox of software for any small business, especially, this would definitely be in it. It seems like a must-have, like you said, to save travel costs and be more effective with all of your different conference calls and meetings, which can get very boring.
They can get very boring. And yeah, it's I spend a lot of time commuting now, because I live in San Francisco and the Twit Cottage here is 40 minutes away. And there's certain things that if I've got to save time, I just have to be remote. You know, certain media, you know, I don't have time to sit in the car for 40 minutes for certain things. So this is a really great tool, definitely recommended. So thanks again to them, gotomeeting.com/night. Should we go to our guest, one Kevin Rose of dig.com, yeah. Amber? All right.
Let's do it.
Kevin, where are you? There he is. Are you in jail?
I am.
He's not, oh, no. That's not good. No, thanks for joining us from jail.
My little back cubicle thing at Dig, so I'm in the very back corner.
Did you move offices or something? That doesn't look like any room I've ever seen at Dig before.
Yeah, when we kind of expanded out a little bit, we took over across the street. So this is actually on Mariposa in San Francisco. Here, I can probably show you a little. Like, this is my cube, and then that's the office right there.
Oh, this is a totally different thing.
Yeah, this is kind of, it's all open floor plan, just kind of, this is where all the developers are and all the engineers, so.
Are there bean bags and Papasan chairs in this Dig office?
There are a couple. There are like two bean bags, and there's a bunch of couches and a ping pong table and a Dig Dug machine, and lots of food and caffeine drinks.
That's always important.
What do you drink in there?
Foosball?
Yeah.
Black tea. Foosball? There's no... maybe. I haven't been upstairs in a while. We added on to the game section, so I don't know.
Nice. I would make a Mad Men joke, but Kevin, I don't think you watch that show.
I watched part of the first season.
Yeah. Well, we're on the fourth season now. There's a joke. Amber, do you watch Mad Men?
No, I don't. I've seen one episode, and... I didn't get hooked, but I know people love it, and it's so popular.
It's one of those slow goers. You have to be invested, and then it
gets
good.
That was the whole thing. The first season, I was like, I kind of liked the idea of it, but it was just so slow going. I was like, I can't sit through this.
you need more of a Lost type of a thing with smoke monsters and plane crashes and babies.
Yeah, although I was pissed at how that ended.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say, I always get frustrated watching shows when they don't take place in our present times. There's something about it that I just don't like. You know, I want people to catch up, and I can't stand how, you know, behind they are. And I think Mad Men fell into that category for me. I just felt like, okay, this is history. It's already happened, and I want to move on. I want something like sci-fi in the future.
That's so funny, because that's actually one of the things I like the most about Mad Men, is because the little details of it was 1960, I guess, when they started, and now it's 1965 after this last episode. And everything's so old, and there's certain things where, you know, someone will make a comment like, well, I've got to get a hold of somebody, and I want him to reach into his pocket and grab his cell phone, but he has to go tell his secretary to send a telegram, or, you know, this kind of all that stuff.
Did you guys see A Hot Tub Time Machine?
I didn't.
I don't think so.
That
sounds familiar, though.
Amber, you would probably know if you saw it.
This is like comedies in the last like 5 years. It's amazing. You got to see it.
I've heard both sides. I've heard from some people that it was great and some people that it was not good.
Well, so, who told you it was not good?
Well, I don't really remember. Probably my Twitter friends, half of whom I don't even know.
That's too funny.
Well,
so, okay, Kevin, I know everybody wants to hear you talk about the new Dig, and I'm sure you've been swamped over the past few weeks working on it. So what was the vision behind the redesign of the site?
Great question. I think that, you know, my level of involvement with Dig over the years has kind of gone up and down and changed and been all over the place. So, you know, the first 2.5-3 years of working at Dig, I was, you know, in the office day to day, putting in, you know, 10-12-hour days. You know, we had some scalability issues and other things that happened over the last couple of years to where we really couldn't launch new products. We were just trying to continue to engineer to keep up with the existing traffic and the new traffic that was coming in. So for me, you know, I kind of stepped back and let other people take over. We hired a VP of product. I started doing more angel investing and things like that. And then, you know, we finally got to a place now, we hope that when we launch this new system based on a brand new backend, that we'll be able to finally once again get back into the place of launching new products, innovating on top of this platform. And so that excites me. That makes me want to jump back in and kind of, you know, start designing new product for Dig. So in coming up with this new design, really, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we haven't tested. This is a brand new backend. It's not based on MySQL. So it's a new kind of, you know, untested NoSQL kind of world. So for me, it was like, you know, what's the low hanging fruit? What can we pair this release down to that when people get on there, they'll say, okay, this is the same Dig that I know and love. It's faster. And it has a couple of the features that, you know, that we know that we want to roll out. It's the kind of stuff that we should have done probably, you know, 6 months or a year ago. So we're playing a little bit of catch up, to be honest. I mean, we've got some stuff that we should have done a while ago that you'll see in this release. And I just wanted to focus on three or five things that we could do really well. And I think that's what V4 for us represents. And then going forward, you know, you'll see us do new releases every month to really try and, you know, launch some of these new bigger features that we think are going to be a lot of fun that are kind of new directions for us.
So what are some of the features or what's maybe the biggest feature that you feel you kind of went, you know, we should have done that a while ago and other people are doing it well and we've got to incorporate it and be a player again?
I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, we still serve billions of impressions of dig buttons per month. And I think the issue is that publishers have always come to us and said that, you know, we love dig, but we only really love dig when we get a front page story. So only when we get something, you know, on the top of dig does it drive a lot of traffic. So for us, you know, we kind of looked at the design and said, okay, how can we build a site that will service more of that long tail of traffic? So a great example is, you know, when Twitter set up their follower system. You know, when you tweet something out, it goes out to your friends, and if they retweet it, it spreads naturally and organically throughout the Twitter ecosystem. And the cool thing about that is that they don't have really a front page. It's kind of, well, maybe they're trending topics. But for them, you know, they can really, they have created a mechanism that allows, you know, any type of content. The content can be 5 years old. And if it starts taking off and getting retweeted, it spreads throughout the system. So for us, you know, we said, okay, we have this homepage that everyone likes to look at because it's kind of the crazy, you know, random zeitgeist of the internet. But what about the long tail? So we developed something called My News. And My News is essentially a custom news feed that is your default view when you sign into V4. That is a combination of what your friends have dug, what tastemakers that you're following have dug, and what sources that you enjoy are digging. So essentially, you know, a friend can post in a link, you know, some crazy video, a Futurama video, and if it starts getting redug with amongst your friends and their friends, it can spread and reach thousands of people, even though it may never hit the front page of Dig. So that's a big change for us because that allows, you know, publishers' content, no matter how new or old, to really spread throughout Dig with a single click, still that single dig, and be seen by a lot of people.
Now, every time a new site launches, inevitably the members are annoyed because something's changed. They're not happy. They wanted more feedback. What has been the response so far from the community there? Because I know you have tons of diehard users.
Oh, for sure. I think that, you know, with us, I've always said a successful release for Dig has been when I'd say 60 to maybe 70% of the community thinks it's a good idea. Because, you know, you always have a big, especially with Dig, because Dig is, you know, people are coming to Dig because they like to vote on content. They want to have their voice heard, right? So they're a very vocal group of people, and we love that. But they also are not shy about giving you their feedback. So I think that the thing that surprised me most about this release is that people seem to, I would say, you know, if you go to Twitter and you search for like new dig in quotes, you'll see the feedback is generally positive. So I've been really happy. I'd say like 75% positive. But you know, there's always going to be people that are, you know, the haters that look at something and say like, ah, I want version 1.0, you know, bring back the old dig. And you have to listen to that to a certain degree. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's just a website, like change things up, you know, just keep pushing the envelope.
And are you not taking away the old dig because you've still got top news and that works the way that diggers, are they called diggers?
Sure.
the dig community. That's what people are used to. It's just that you've added functionality where you and me and Amber can share stories, and it's more probably going to be more relevant to all of us because we already have similar interests. And I'm not just reading the top page of the larger dig community unless I want to. If I choose to just kind of drill it down into the stories that I and my friends have dug, you know, it more options is a good thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, we still keep, as a logged out user, we keep the default view, the top news. But I think that, you know, there's some upset people, especially some of the people that try to game dig, that have tons of accounts that they try and get that front page story. Because if we divert traffic from the front page and make it more about the consumption through My News, then it makes them less powerful. So some of the, you know, more top users, they can get upset about these things. I don't know. We have so many different kind of like little debates going on at not at Dig, but from the Dig community, meaning like there's people that are politically motivated to dig stories or bury stories that we have to deal with every single day. There's people that are paid to try and get their stories on the front page of Dig. I mean, it's a constant battle. It's kind of like, you know, I think of it in the way that, you know, Google or anyone else tries to deal with, you know, there's either their search engine results being gamed or spam getting into Gmail. Like our battle is with people trying to either try to figure out ways to manipulate the Dig system. It's a arms race kind of.
Hey, I'm curious, just because I've talked to lots of people and I'm really interested in mobile technology, as I'm sure both of you guys are. And I've even had conversations with friends who say, you know, there's going to be a day, and it's not so far in the future, when we won't even go to websites anymore. We're going to access everything on our mobile phones. What are Dig's plans as far as being kind of a mobile application and kind of beefing up that part of the business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we just did a blog post this morning. We completely revamped our mobile page to, you know, be more iPhone friendly. So if you go to new.dig.com on your iPhone, it's all revamped. We actually have My News and everything working on that. But yeah, for us, I mean, if you take a look at 2 years ago, the number of engineers that we have dedicated to mobile was, you know, a quarter of a single engineer, you know, working on kind of formatting pages for mobile and things like that. And I mean, a quarter meaning of their time. You know, now it's probably, I'd say, 10 to 15% of Dig. So, you know, we have a handful of people, probably 5-6 engineers that are working on Android apps, you know, iPad apps, iPhone apps, things like that. So I see that continuing to grow over time. And so as the market share of these devices continues to take off, we'll adjust our engineering allocation accordingly. So, you know, more engineers will be focused on mobile and different platforms.
Do you find in the situation with people gaming Dig, and I know that that's been an issue since, I mean, for years, it just, you change your algorithm and then people figure out ways to try to get around it so that they can get page views and this and that. And yeah, if you have an issue, an ongoing issue of people using it for personal gain and in a way violating terms, is your only choice really to just change the way that it's set up if you can't figure out how to make them go away?
It's one of these things where it's tricky because you have the way that I initially set up the system with, you know, a Dig being a positive vote and a bury being something to remove a bad piece of content, you know, works in theory if everyone's doing it for the right reasons. You know, they're not trying to manipulate right. The system. You know, you'll have people that recently we had a little outbreak on the site, or a fairly big outbreak on the site with some right-wing and left-wing people colliding, saying that, you know, this site is burying our stories, you know, our content doesn't make the front of the homepage. So it's tricky because, you know, we want to create kind of a neutral playground for all these different groups to come together, no matter what your beliefs are, right? So how can we make sure that people, how can we ensure that, you know, people aren't going after another party or another group maliciously? So, you know, we take a look at diversity of digs. It's just a thing that we have to constantly tweak. Like, I'm not going to say, let's remove the bury, because we want the community still to have the choice of removing bad content, right? But we might figure out ways in which we segment off the content. So one of the things that I've wanted to do for a long time is really open up the taxonomy of digs so that, you know, if there is someone that's pro-abortion or against abortion, like, they can have their own playground to go in there where stories can't be removed and they can have these discussions, right?
Yeah, they're not forced to be competing with people who have the exact opposite view of them for a top spot on the homepage,
right,
say.
Exactly. That's it, exactly. So it's not easy. I mean, to be honest, right now, you know, we got some flack last week from a bunch of users saying, like, hey, this is something you need to address. And, like, I've got, you know, 40 engineers that are working day and night to launch this next version of Dig. Like, we don't have time right now to look into all this diversity stuff. We've looked into it and we see that there's a couple little tweaks and some problems that we could fix, but we got to do that in a few weeks after we get this new launch out the door. I'm just, you know, I'm not a big political guy. I could care less one way or the other. So it's like, I see these battles, and for a lot of people, they get really charged and excited. And for me, it's just like, I hate seeing people fight over politics. It's just, you know, pain in the ass.
I went on Twitter and just asked if people had questions for you. Of course, there's way too many for you to answer in the next few minutes. But this is one from Ross, and he asks, how is Dig planning to compete with the tight-knit community of Reddit?
Well, I don't know how to say this without slamming Reddit, but they're, you know, maybe 1/100th of the size of Digg when it comes to overall traffic. So I don't think we'd necessarily directly compete with them. They're a different site. They're a small, very awesome, tight-knit community of people that like to do what they do. It's not that I look at them and see, they're not really on my radar as competition. These are guys that have come over to the office before. They've discussed their technology challenges. We're on the same kind of new platform with Cassandra. We're committed to helping them out with their scaling issues. And I'm sure they can help us out in some ways with their engineers working on these problems. A lot of people like to compare us, but, you know, I think that we're a little bit more mainstream when it comes to our content, and they're a little bit more, you know, tight knit, kind of focused in a certain area. So I don't know.
Basically, there's room for more than one.
I'm not sure that I would say.
I think it's almost like, Kevin, go ahead.
This is like a satellite
interview. I was just
going to
say, if there's going to be real competition, it's going to be competition for the two of us, meaning that there'll be like some other, like someone will come up with a great way of figuring out the zeitgeist information around the Facebook or Twitter fire hose, right? And something like this will come out of left field. And I don't think that we are direct competitors per se, is more as there'll probably be a third challenger, someone new in the social news space that launches a great, you know, iPad app like Flipboard or something like that, where all of a sudden we're both like, oh shit, this is a new take on things.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it reminds me of being a woman in the tech field. And so often I've had people say to me, oh, well, you know, this woman is your competition. And it's like, there's not enough room for more than one person. And it reminds me of the same sort of thing. I mean, there's room for multiple players. You just kind of do different things.
Yeah, honestly, I'm excited that, you know, the more players that get in here and actually validate like the social news space, I think is a good thing for all of us.
Kevin, from somebody who doesn't work in this startup atmosphere, I mean, you built Digg from the ground up. And you know, you were, at one point, it was just you with an idea. And now it's a big company with a lot of employees. And you're right now going through the process of shifting gears somewhat substantially. How big is the scale of what you're doing? I mean, how long is the process? Is it a 6-month process? I mean, will it never end? You know, for those of us who don't work in the way that you're working, how long does it take for a company to get to the next level and to get everybody on board and to make sure that the community understands what's different and that whole thing?
A lot longer than it should be.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me wish that, you know, we were a small 2 or 3 person startup again. Like, you always kind of look back to those old days when you could just say like, hey, it'd be cool if we added this feature. And by that night, like that feature is live. So, I mean, to give you an idea of what we're dealing with now, you know, we have about 40 to 50 engineers working on this full time around the clock. It's taken us to get from the old platform to the new one about 6 to 8 months, something like that.
Wow.
We've got multiple data centers, one on the East Coast and the West Coast, that are talking to each other in real time. They share information in Digs and serve traffic to the right people, depending on where you're coming from in the world. And, you know, hundreds and hundreds of servers that have to be working and in sync and monitored and load balancers. And I mean, it's a big operation. To be honest, it's bigger than I'm comfortable with. So I'm very excited to hire a CEO very soon, because I just, you know, there's like 80 some people, and I'm not cut out to be a CEO of this size of company.
Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be the CEO. You're just the CEO
right
now. Because I wondered about that. Maybe that's just what you wanted, and you just said you were going to be the CEO for a little while. It'll happen.
I highly encourage you guys. I'm sure, I don't know if you've read this book, maybe Amber has, because I know you like these books, Amber. Like Rework from Jason Fried.
Yeah.
From 37 Signals. He talks about, you know, the need to not expand and have a very small company, and you can do great things with teams of 10 or 15 people. And it's like, you know, down the road, once Digg, you know, is bigger and I can kind of separate myself from the company a little bit, my next company is going to be, you know, based out of Portland, Oregon or something, and just like a small group of like 10 people, and just, I'm just going to be chilling in the woods and drinking tea and chopping wood and
are
shit
you
like
still
that
on that
fishing.
Portland thing? That's still the goal? To have a small company up in the woods in Portland?
That.
I've been hearing that for 10 years.
I bet I've been talking about that for a long time.
Well, I hope you get there.
Hopefully.
If that's what you want. Amber, are there any more Twitter questions for Kevin that we can put him on the spot about?
Yeah, there are actually a few questions. I just have one last question, and this kind of leads into what I think people are asking on Twitter as well. As far as being an entrepreneur, I mean, you do so many different things. You have so many different companies, and we have Youngzi here who's asking, do you have advice for aspiring tech entrepreneurs, people who want to get into the business and kind of look to you as a role model?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one piece of advice that I think that well, for number one, read Rework. That's a great book. Number two, definitely, you know, I have a lot of people that email me and say, I've got this great idea. I'm going to make a ton of money. And I guess like their first sentence of their email. And, you know, when going in a dig, I remember thinking to myself over and over again, if I could eventually pay the rent for my apartment, which at the time was like $600, like I would be really stoked. Like that would be awesome. But the cool thing is like, this was something that I was really passionate about, right? So the nice thing about following a true passion of yours is that it never really feels like work. So you can put in those 12-hour days, you know, you can stay up till 1-2 in the morning, and it, all of a sudden it's like you don't get exhausted as easy because you're like, this is my dream, I love this, and you'll be stoked to quit your job and work on it, right? So I don't ever let money be the driver for things. If you succeed, and that comes great. If it doesn't and you're able to pay your rent, that's great too. You know, it's like my next startup, I just wanted to be something that people are like, wow, that's a little different take on things. And I don't really care if it's another big company like Dig. Like I didn't intend for this to happen. It's like, what I want more than anything is you just want to be, you know, content in what you're doing. And I think that, you know, people forget that how important that is.
Cool. I think that's all the questions from me. I know there are more questions on Twitter. Maybe you'll have a chance to look at some of them. I'm sure you're swamped though. But
you
think
have to
that
do some
great
hard ones. There's no tough.
There
Kevin's
aren't
an
really.
Asshole, like,
I mean, something. Kevin, do you really want Amber and I to give you hardball questions?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we could make the show weird quick, but
yeah, it could get strange very quickly. I think you should take this opportunity, probably.
All right, guys, we'll see you later. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Kevin, you can go back to your underground bunker and write some code, and you know, try to fight the Dig Patriots or whatever it is that you're doing for the rest of the day. But thanks so much for talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, and good luck with everything, and we'll be watching.
Sorry it was so late to set this all up. I apologize. I'm glad I could make it.
That's okay.
No worries. It keeps it exciting.
Hi, Dig guys.
All right.
Wow.
See you guys.
Thanks.
Hi.
Bye.
It's funny. He talks about how the you get the sense that Kevin is like, boy, this company is really big. This is not really what I intended. But then you look around and it's like, there's basketball hoops and woo, coworkers and stuff. It's like, I don't know. That seems like a pretty good,
it looks like
big
a fun
company
place
to work for. Yes, exactly.
No kidding. I was going to say, I got totally distracted by your last comments. Now I'm like at a loss for words.
Well, while you're collecting your thoughts, I could take a moment to thank Squarespace for sponsoring the show.
Thank you.
You're
that
welcome.
Would be a great idea.
Yes. So if you're not familiar with Squarespace, I really think you should be. I use Squarespace for my personal blog, which has really been neglected lately, and I don't have a good reason because I love using Squarespace. You could think of it as a blogging engine, but it's really a lot more than that because It's a module, but you can set up forums, a photo gallery, whether you're a professional photographer or you're just dabbling. You can build forums. You can incorporate Google Maps. I mean, it's really an all-in-one, beautiful, very visually beautiful solution for somebody who's got a lot to say online. You can be a real novice when it comes to cascading style sheets. Squarespace provides a really easy way to kind of drag and drop things into place. If you want your page to look a certain way, you can do that with almost no technical know-how at all. But if you are on the other side of the spectrum, I know Amber does a lot of that web design stuff, then Squarespace allows you to go that route as well. So you're in complete control of the layout and a lot of the content that you have on your blog or your other Squarespace site. Everything's in the cloud and Ajax interface. I mean, I could go on and on about kind of what's under the hood about Squarespace, but I think what I always come away with it, and whenever I show anybody who hasn't used Squarespace before, oh, here's how I set up my blog, they go, oh, wow, that that's so cool. That's so easy. It's so much easier than I thought it was going to be. And I have a somewhat complicated, unique Squarespace layout that some of the Squarespace folks actually helped me set up. And I spent a lot of time tinkering around. It was a lot of fun. But as little work or as much work as you want to do on your blog, Squarespace is a great solution. And we've got a great little setup. If you go to squarespace.com/night, you can set up an account. You can try it out. You can see if it's the solution for you. And if it is, you can import like your WordPress blog or a TypePad blog. That's what I did. I used to use TypePad before I used Squarespace. So you've got a lot. If you've got somewhere that you've put a lot of effort into and you want to move over to Squarespace and you think it's the right thing for you, it can be done. Squarespace.com/night is the URL to try it out. Highly recommended from me. And if you like it, let us know.
You know, it's such a great service. Sometimes I feel like I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even want to recommend it. I just want people to go use it because once I get in there.
And think, wow, Amber really knows her stuff.
would be helpful as well.
This is a good-looking solution. Yeah, Squarespace.
Yes, just so great. It's so easy to use. And I think that's the biggest thing is that finally it's easy for the average person to build a website. And thanks to Squarespace, that makes it possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're good people. Good folks working at Squarespace, too. The whole team is really nice. And I know there are a lot of people working at a lot of nice companies. But when you're working directly with folks who are, they're really good with customer support. Every once in a while I have a question and they're always getting back to me right away. It's like, just gives me kind of a warm fuzzy. So
yes. It's
always, I feel good to be recommending them because I know the team and they're good folks.
They're good people. All right. So I know we don't have much time left. I know. Maybe I'll just mention one other quick thing. This is a site called weplaces.com, and it's relatively new, I think. It's just a little service that allows you to visualize places you've been checked in on Foursquare.
And this is now, rather than
exactly.
You and me, we. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
although it's probably meant to kind of be both.
It might be both.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is neat. You know, when I look at it from a text standpoint, I think it's cool, location-based services, checking in, seeing a graph of where you've been. But then there's part of me that dives into people who have posted their profiles publicly online of basically where they go on a regular basis. And I sort of think maybe this is kind of crossing some line into, invading someone's personal privacy in the sense that people can kind of figure out all the places you go on a regular basis. So neat service if you're into that. If you want to protect your privacy, then I would say stay far away from it.
And it is, this is a totally opt-in kind of a thing. If you're a Foursquare user and you're not logged into We Places, you still have control over who you're sharing your check-ins with, right? I think I do a lot of, I'm actively trying to steal a few mayorships right now. So I'm logging into a lot of the same places repeatedly every day.
I just want to say that you said marriageships, not marriages, because it kind of could have come across the wrong way.
Oh, no, I'm actively trying to steal some marriages as well. but that's not what I was talking about just now. In this case, it is the crown of the mayorship. No, yeah, not marriages. That's different. But I check into a lot of places repeatedly. And so if you really wanted to know, if somebody random had access to my Foursquare stream, they could probably find me pretty quickly. You know, 10 a.m., she's usually rolling into Mercury Cafe right about now, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So WePlaces it's for the folks who are, I guess, kind of physical or geographical oversharers who like that sort of thing, and maybe not for everybody.
That's a great term, geographical oversharers. I'm going to use that.
Thanks. Yeah. Just came right up.
Love it.
All right. Well, are we going to wrap up this Net at Night?
I think so. I know. Here I was thinking that we'd have to find content, and it went so quickly. So that was a good one, Sarah. It's always good to see you and do the show with you.
So
it takes a different, it takes a different journey when we do it together. I like it.
It is. Yeah, I know. It's so fun. I love talking about Net at Night content because it's stuff that I know that we're just thinking about anyway. So it's like, it's just like two cool chicks having a conversation, and it just happens to be a show. So
it's lots of fun.
I can't think of anything better.
Me neither.
Cool. All right, Amber. Well, thanks for everybody for joining us on Net at Night, episode 163. Boy, we're getting up there. And I guess Leah will be back next week. I'm Sarah Lane, and you can see me on other shows around the TWiT network. I do TNT a couple days a week. Green Tech Today is one of our newest shows that we just launched. And, of course, iPad Today with Leo. And Amber, you do all sorts of other things. In fact, you're really, really busy.
pretty much just go to ambermack.com, and there's a good overview of all the projects I'm involved in.
Cool. All right, then.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Amber. We'll see you next week on Net at Night. Bye, everybody.